Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Red Light Podcast Redux. This is your host, Gina Savage. Today, I am very happy to welcome our WROM radio listeners in Detroit, internet users worldwide, subscribers, etc. But today in the house, a friend of mine, actually, I can call you friend. We've hung out.
We're very much friends.
Somebody who gets it all the way around. I don't mean physically speaking, you're a married man. What am I talking about? He is a writer, comic for The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. You were with Jimmy then. Mm-hmm. Comics Unleashed, Gotham Comedy Live. You've earned 2 Emmy nominations. Is that correct?
Yep.
You've written for Seth Meyers.
Mm-hmm.
You wrote for the White House Correspondents' Dinner, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah, we thought we got Trump that time. We thought we knocked him out, and then I think it just made him madder.
And then he, I remember that.
It backfired.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have in the house John Reinman.
Hi, Gina.
Yay. I do this.
I'm so happy to finally be here.
I know. I'm so happy that you're here.
We've been planning this for a while.
We have.
Yeah.
Because your schedule's so crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah.
I mean, it's nuts.
Well, I don't know. It's not really that crazy. I mean, it's
our
just
mutual
like a,
schedule. Yeah.
Yeah, our mutual schedule. I don't know. I mean, it's like a just a job. You know, it's a day job.
It's a day job.
Kind of a bigger 9-to-5 sort of deal.
Oh, I'd say.
So, a little bit crazier hours. But we're off this week, so I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm glad that you're here. I like to get background. So mm-hmm. I'm going to go so far back to the time we were talking, and you said when you were born, you didn't cry.
That's correct.
You didn't cry.
I didn't make a sound.
And
my eyes were open when that's
the
story.
Strangest.
Even before I was in anything, because you're a kid and you ask, what was it like? And, because you find out what a baby is. And you're like, what was I like as a baby? And so my parents said that when I was born, it was a very quick thing. Like, I think they went to the hospital, I think, around 2 in the morning, and I was born at, 10. And I just kind of, I was born, and they held me up. And my dad said I just looked around the room at everybody and said he said, frankly, you looked a little annoyed. Yeah, that's how.
Were you ready to work right then?
I don't know.
Like a suit and a briefcase, you're ready to go.
He said it looked like, and other people in the room said, they were like, you looked around like, who are you people? Like, that was my thing. And I didn't cry. And I was like pleasant. Like, I was just kind of like, I guess I looked the way you would look if you got on an elevator full of people. And I was just like, oh, all right. And so I didn't make any noise the first day or two I was alive. I didn't make a single sound.
Not a single sound.
Maybe a grunt or something, but I didn't cry. I didn't, anything. And they started to get worried. Because at first it was like, oh, this is good. Yeah, and then they're like, wait a minute, why is he being like this?
Right, like maybe
and,
you have a problem.
Yeah, and so I think pretty much the whole time I was in the hospital, I kind of just looked at people. I didn't cry. And so they did tests and everything was fine. And then on the way out of the hospital, my mom, this is in Beverly Hospital in Massachusetts, and my mom knew that hospital very well, because, sadly her father had passed away a few years before, so that's where they took care of him, but also her sister, had been a nurse there. That's where she started working. So my mom knew, a lot of the staff, and there was this one other nurse there that my aunt had been friends with that I think I don't know if this was just made up in the story to tell me.
Okay.
But I've always been told that there was something odd about her. Like, she was one of those, counterculture people.
Oh, your aunt?
And this is,
your aunt?
No, her friend.
Oh, her friend. Okay.
And this was, Beverly, Massachusetts. So it's the next town over from Salem, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
So always, it's easy for those rumors to get started. And so she picked me up and said to me, now I want you to make a lot of noise for your parents as soon as you leave the hospital and make a lot of noise to their face the rest of your life. And then put me back down. And then my mom said the minute I got to the car, I went crazy. I started.
Really?
Yeah, I started just screaming and crying.
That's
so she's always. And the lady was still there when my sister was born. So she kind of kept her away from her.
Wow. Is it maybe because she's so close to Salem and the witch?
Could be.
The witch hunts of Salem.
But yeah.
She has some sort of
so that's
ancestry.
That's what they blame it on.
Yeah.
So yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's that behind you.
Yeah.
That makes you, you're partly nutty because of that.
I think so. Yeah.
All right. So do you have brothers and sisters?
I have one sister.
One sister younger?
She's younger. Yeah.
Okay. So you're the big brother.
Mm-hmm.
You're growing up in that house. Now you grew up in New Hampshire?
Yes.
Okay. How much of your life was spent there?
I lived in Massachusetts till I was three, and then I moved to we moved to New Hampshire, and that's where my parents have been ever since. So they've been there 30 years now. And so, yeah, I'm from the...
You're from Northampton.
Northampton, which is near... it's about 20 minutes south of Portsmouth and about 10 minutes north of Hampton Beach. So it's kind of... It's right over the state line in Massachusetts there.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting place. It's... New Hampshire's New Hampshire. There's no... It really is. Like, if you... When you're
trees.
Driving to New... Yeah, people right. are always like, what part's New Hampshire? Like, it doesn't matter what part's New Hampshire. Right, you're in New Hampshire's New Hampshire.
Yeah, it's pretty, though.
It is pretty, yeah. But we're weird. Like, we have, like, you know, right when you cross over, because, I don't know, we just kind of take advantage of the states around us that have laws for things, and we just say, nah, it's okay, you can do it here.
Are you so lawless, like, in New Hampshire?
Kind of, yeah, because it's like, well, it's like, for instance, you know... The liquor store thing, I don't know what it is now in Massachusetts, but when I was a kid, you couldn't get stuff in Massachusetts on Sundays, but you could get it in New Hampshire, and you'd get it cheaper.
Okay.
So people would, and the funny thing is, they put the liquor store right on the highway, which is a brilliant place. I mean, yeah. And it's really just like...
Drinking and driving.
Right, exactly. So they put the liquor store right on the highway, and then the cops, the state police is like, I don't know, 2 minutes down the highway.
Right.
And I'm like, as a kid, I'm like, is no one figuring out... what the scheme is here. Like, people are like, oh, it's great. This has got the booze right here. And I'm like, but you know the cops are like, oh, yeah, what's the big deal? I'm like, I think there's a plan here.
I like the voices.
Like, I think that seriously, they're like, yeah, well, we'll make the money off the booze. Then
right.
this idiot will swerve a little bit. We'll pull him over. We'll get 200 more bucks.
Yeah,
and
genius.
And bail.
Yeah.
And now everyone wins. Everyone makes money except for that one. Even that one guy is like, hey, it was a fun day.
Well, you got to make money. I was reading up the population of Northampton mm-hmm. in 2010, mm-hmm. mind you, was mm-hmm. only 4,300 people or
That's
so.
That's right. Yeah, it's a small town.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. It's you know what's great about it is that it's a small town, but it's very passionate people. And mm-hmm. so like my dad, he was a selectman for a while. And my mom was a newspaper reporter, and it's totally one of my soft spots for things that I find funny are town meetings. Like, I just
oh
think that's
God.
The funniest thing, because
yeah.
you always have, it's just anything goes.
Yeah.
So it'll literally be like I was talking to someone the other day, and somehow we were talking about, I think it's because the cicadas are coming back.
Okay.
And
And
she was like, oh, I hated it because they covered the sidewalks. And I was like, well, I didn't have sidewalks where I grew up, so I didn't know. And it's true, I didn't.
Right.
I didn't have any sidewalks. But then I thought about it, and they put in a sidewalk once in my town on Atlantic Avenue, which is like the main drag road.
Right.
And you would have thought it was building the Freedom Tower.
Oh,
the way the legislation and the fights and the what went into this, and it was... you know, it was literally half a mile. That was the exact
right.
length. Because,
right.
I mean, you couldn't, it's not like, I mean, it's, you know, it's a place, you had 4,300 people.
Right.
And everyone went insane. And I don't think it ever got done. But it was one of those things where everyone showed up with an opinion. And it was just people that, but it was all for themselves.
Yeah, of course.
So it'd be like, you know, I think my dad at the time, I think he was against it because it was just, it seemed like a waste of money. It was like, who's going to use this thing?
The quarter mile sidewalk.
So then one person with a business, with like a convenience store at the end of it, he shows up and he's like, well, I think we should build this for these kids. And it was like, does it have anything to do with the fact that it ends at your store? It's like,
yeah.
Well, no, it's for exercise. And then, you know, a parent would show up and be like, I want to do it. Because clearly just doesn't want to take care of her kids. Doesn't want to have to pick her kids up from school. But then there's always that weird guy who shows up, with just because anyone can talk at a town meeting.
Oh, yeah.
So there'll be that guy that shows up who wants like the truth about the UFO incident 40 years ago.
Oh,
so
my
he shows
God.
Up and he's like, all right, I've been watching a documentary. And you guys, I know you got your kids and your school stuff, but I really want to get to the bottom of this. And they have to listen to him and they have to do it. And it's all on public access TV.
Oh, that's great.
So it's just fantastic. And it happened to be on Monday nights. So when I was a kid, I would watch. I would watch Monday Night Raw wrestling, and then commercials like flip over to the town meeting. And
oh, my God.
It was just nonstop, just great stuff.
So you really enjoyed the drama of your town. I saw your town hall. I saw it. Like,
yeah.
It's pictured.
Yeah.
It's like a white building.
Yeah,
like
it is. Right? Yeah. That's
well,
wow.
Most,
really
I
did,
guess
you,
most of them
You did your research. Yeah.
I do a little bit of research.
Yeah. And so that's where I grew up, and it's I was just there the other day. And
were you really?
Yeah. And a
At
lot
the
of
town hall?
I drove by it with my dad. My dad got a truck. My dad's...
I saw the picture on your...
Yeah, he's a giant truck. My dad is going to be 68 years old, and he decided, you know what? I think I need a truck for all the things that, guys in their late 60s do.
Yeah, what are they...
I mean, good for him. He's happy. I don't know. I mean, I guess that, like, he's probably just doing... he's probably picking up, like, lawn supplies and stuff. But my dad's one of these... I think this is just a thing. I don't know if it's in every country or in our country where... Do you notice that when guys get older, that's when they start to, like, get real? They're like normal guys. And then all of a sudden when they're, like, in their 60s, they're like, you know what? We got to step in and protect this country.
Oh, yeah.
In your, in your 60s. So, yeah. Because a few years ago, my dad had a birthday and... I don't know if he asked. I think he kind of dropped hints for some stuff he wanted. So we all got what he wanted. And then it came together and it wound up being a high-powered flashlight.
They love the flashlight.
Binoculars.
Yeah.
A police scanner.
Oh, yeah.
And something else for the woods. Like some other thing. Like I want to say like an air horn or something like that.
Yeah, well,
like
the survival stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
And it became very clear there was an agenda. Here.
Oh, yeah, he's
and I
was, you know.
And I kind of was like, well, you know, I gotta keep an eye on things. And I was like, you know, Dad, I haven't heard much about ISIS recruiting deer, so I don't I don't know what you think you're stopping here. But I mean, my thing was like, yeah, I guess he's in the AARP team. That's his thing.
Yeah,
the
that's
A team.
Great.
He's gonna get three of his buddies, and they're just gonna, I don't know, make sure people don't fish illegally.
Dad ought to get together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I was happy, we went for a ride, and then I drove it and almost backed right into something when I was going out. So it was good. It kind of I felt like a kid again, almost screwing up my dad's car.
That's nice.
You know?
That's nice. That's good stuff.
Like, he's being really nice when I go home visit, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to see if I can, oh, there he is. There's Dad.
Yeah.
He's me.
That's
you know?
Awesome. Is your room, now, is it, it's the same house? That
same
you
house, yeah.
Okay. Is your room still sort of preserved?
Totally preserved.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's weird.
You're like I didn't even know people like you exist anymore.
I forgot to tell my wife, Rebecca, because I've changed a lot. Like, when I was in high school, I think that's why I write well for Jimmy, is because when I was in high school, that was my style of comedy. I was very kind of happy and energetic and variety, and I played, the drums, and I could do impressions and all that stuff. And so my personality was different. And then, I kind of grew up and got away from that, but the room stayed the same. So when I first, Rebecca came to my parents' house for the first time, and I forgot to warn her, and she kind of... And before I could, like, she
warn her about what?
Okay, on one wall I have a mural of a beach in the Caribbean. So that's behind my bed.
Like a painted thing, or
like a photograph?
Okay.
Blown up on the wall. That's the whole wall. So if you look at the bed, it looks like
you're
on
the beach. Okay.
And then on the wall to the left of it, there's the New York skyline. And it's, like, on the wall. So it literally looks like I'm saying literally a lot. That's a pet peeve of mine. It specifically looks like it's a kid's bedroom from a 90s sitcom, basically.
Yeah, no, that's...
I got dreams. I'm going to make things happen. And I'm going to be on vacation half of the year. And over there is where I work.
Well, look
and
at
then,
that.
Yeah, and it kind of worked. But it's a bit on the nose. Because you want to always tell people, like, oh, this is a dream for me. I never knew this career. This is a great life. And then you go into my bedroom. It's like, no, you've been planning this since you were a kid. So I can't. And then I have one wall that I redid my room in high school. We had a class project where we had to... research something and do it. And so my room still looked like a kid's room. And so I got it redone. And I kept one strip of the wall that had the wallpaper from when I was a little kid, which was just the train wallpaper.
Okay, you had the train wallpaper.
Yeah, so there's this one strip in there that's it's almost like I'm paying homage. Like, you know, like, oh, there's the old days. And came back with Rebecca, and I forget that, like, oh, this room looks like a dream project for some kid. And I walked in and said, like, oh, okay, so I got to explain it. She was already taking pictures of everything.
Oh, my
posting
God.
It
everywhere. I'm friends with your wife, I could see her doing that.
And it was just that just that look on her face of just, like, you know, oh, I got you.
Yeah.
Mr. Grumpy Pants. I got who you used to be.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, is that her nickname for you? Because, like,
no,
you are kind of an old dude.
She has nicknames.
Right.
That's not the nickname.
Okay.
dumbass. But they're all pretty generous given the dumb things I do and say sometimes.
All right. So let me ask you a question. All right. because you are kind of, you talk about this, you're kind of like an old man's mindset. Mm-hmm. You're like, I mean, your dad's got the young truck, he's ready to go. You're kind of like,
yeah,
you know, set,
we traded places.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre. You're like Benjamin Buttoning. I've never seen the movie, but
me
I
neither.
Right,
it
I've never
too
seen
close to home.
Right. Yeah. It's true. Yeah. I mean, like, you're coming out of the gate an old guy, and, yeah, you know, you're, what's the deal with that, John?
I don't know. I don't know.
Just
I think
makeup.
Well, my, you know, to go back even further, I mean, my parents always said that I kind of acted like when I was a baby, I acted like Stewie from Family Guy.
Oh, you could you do the voice?
No, I can't do the voice.
Okay,
because
you
maybe
do voices. I have heard you do a great. We'll get to it, but you do a great Leno.
I do an okay Leno, but So that's kind of who I was as a. I just kind of think I was. I don't want to. I'm not trying to brag or anything because I'm definitely not the smartest guy now. But I think I was talking at like 10 months.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I kind of got things. And
what's your IQ?
No idea.
No
probably
idea.
Not. I'm not a good test taker, so okay. I'm sure it'd be terrible. But So just little things. Like I can remember my mom was watching Facts of Life once, and I just hated. I just as a toddler, like one and a half, decided I hated this show. And my first memory of my mom getting mad at me was she was watching Facts of Life on like a Saturday, I think it was on, and I just grabbed the remote and shut off the TV at
and
a half.
And, you're awesome.
And it, man, it was one of those old TVs. It was like click. Made like a, it was like 84 or whatever.
Yeah.
And she looked down. She, why did you do that? And I just stared back. And that was just how I've always kind of been. And so we had like a guy that I think he like came to my parents' first house. And I don't know if he was a plumber or a carpenter or something. He had to get something fixed. And I hung out with this guy all day. And I don't remember it, of course. But he told my parents he thought I was an old soul.
Yeah.
And like I said, you know, when you grow up in that area, that was Marblehead, so it was, you know, that whole Salem area, everyone really believes in that stuff. So I remember they got me tested. Like, I remember that I did, like, IQ tests and stuff like that. And I did well, but I think they won't talk about it now, but I think they were trying to figure out if something was – if I was going to be one of these kids, it was like, just to let you know, I'm back from World War II, living in a baby's – you know these kids?
Right.
I have a Mike DiCenzo, who works for the show, is fascinated by that stuff.
Yeah.
So he's – we've talked about it a couple times, but like, I don't know. It freaks me out to think about it. But I've always kind of been, I don't know. I never felt like a kid. I never felt like I was part of the kids. I always felt like I was just a person and I had my own opinions and it could.
That's great. You had your own sense of self, whatever that's.
Well, it is great, except
was.
It comes across, well, except,
alone. It comes across kind of snobby, maybe.
Very obnoxious.
Yeah, exactly.
And so when you're, you know, when you're a kid, like, I remember, like, I would just understand things. Like, I understood politics. So, like, during, like, the election, like, I was 88, so I was about 5. I remember my parents were watching the debate, Bush versus Dukakis.
Oh, my God.
And I said, are these two guys, you know, who are they? Well, they're running for president. And I pointed at Dukakis and I was like, not this guy.
Wow.
Yeah. I just knew. Like,
you
I could just
knew.
Tell. But the thing is, I couldn't, you can't back it up as a kid. So you just come across like a real, and that
like,
still happens.
Like, yeah.
I'm not good. I'm good at having an opinion and reading things, but I can't articulate why I feel
okay.
that way.
So, all right. When do you discover in this whole scenario you're painting a picture of? That you're funny or that you write funny or you're thinking funny thoughts? When does this happen?
It would get me attention. I would say something funny and all the adults would stop what they were doing and they would...
Do you remember the first thing you said that... I mean, I...
Oh, boy.
That might have done that? I'm just curious.
I don't totally remember. I don't know.
Okay.
I know that... I do know, like, I can't tell you specifics, but I know that, like, if I got into school, like, if I was in kindergarten and a teacher, you know, got mad at me for something or she was just mad at the class.
Right.
I knew that I had this ability to wait until she was done talking and then jump in with something funny, like a
right.
just a joke about what she said and the whole class would laugh.
Erupt.
And the other teacher would laugh. So I got everybody. And then even the teacher that was kind of mad was kind of laughing. So anytime you have someone who... And I think that's part of my, I think that's shaped my personality in a mm-hmm. sad way. Is that, you know, some comedians, you know, you have a guy like Jimmy, everyone loves him. And so he's just a good guy. And he goes out and he embraces that. He embraces that everybody likes him, and he goes out and, you know, everyone's on his side. And I just have this sick thing where I love getting people who don't like me to laugh. Like, it's this weird, like, bad guy wrestler thing.
Okay.
Where I'm just like, and I was like that in sports, too. Like, when I played sports, I always played better when we had, like, away games. Because I just, I just
getting that.
Yeah, I liked looking over at the other kids being sad. Being like, yeah, well, we just won. I don't know. It's this weird thing.
You know.
I'm the same way now. If I watch the Celtics and they went on the road and you see people in the stands really upset, I'm like, yeah, that's right.
All right. Let's talk about that for a minute. Mm-hmm. Before we get to like how we really should talk about. All right. First, let's talk about Leno because you're in college at the time that you're submitting.
No, I'd just gotten out of college.
Right,
I probably could have done it in college, but I didn't.
And you went to Emerson.
I went to Emerson.
And
in
we
Boston.
Know a lot of alumni out of there, like Bill Burr and Eddie Brill and Dennis Leary and Stephen Wright. Right, are all these guys that came out of Emerson?
Yep. So Mario Cantone.
Great company.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of good people. Jennifer Coolidge. Oh, she went there. Henry Winkler.
I didn't get in there.
And then
went to NYU.
I wouldn't have gotten in now. Yeah. I got in. I was like, now it's a very, it's always been a good school, but now it's very good. Like now it's very, very competitive.
Yeah.
And, I would not have gotten in now with the grades and stuff I had then.
Yeah.
Luckily I was one of the last few.
You got in.
And I, the whole time there, like I don't know. I was just very scattered at the time. So it was very apparent the whole time there that they were like, this kid got in.
Really?
Yeah, kind of, because I'd go there. There were kids that had gone to the film school already.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were some kids whose parents worked in the industry. You know, like they had parents who were actors or whatever.
Right.
And there was a lot of people who weren't. There was like a fair mix. Like it was a lot of people, like a little bit of both. But, I hadn't seen any of the movies. I hadn't done anything that all these other kids had done. And so I was kind of I always felt like an outsider there. And that was the first place, too, that something that, like, I feel that everyone's probably noticed is kind of apparent in comedy now. Like, I think nerd bullying, and by that I mean I feel like a lot of comedy is a lot of people who kind of got picked on as kids.
Oh, yeah.
And now they're picking on everyone else. And it's like, it's a very, like, it's on, it's on Facebook and Twitter and all that.
Yes.
So when I went to Emerson, before the internet had really become what it had, that was the first place where I kind of experienced that, where it was like, I loved Saturday Night Live.
Right. Okay.
I loved, that stuff. I loved mainstream late night shows. And then there was other kids that, they only liked the underground stuff and the Comedy Central stuff and then I wasn't.
Hey, you were watching the old people stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, in a sense,
I wasn't
watching
one of the
cool old
kids.
Right.
Yeah, and it's still, I mean, it still kind of continues. Like it's, I'm never not part of that hip scene. But that was the thing about Emerson is that it comes and goes, but that was the first place where I experienced that like, in high school I went to a very, kind of blue collar high school, very, mm-hmm. very normal Anytown USA high school, Winneconnet in Hampton. It was a great place. One of my favorite places. And it's always good seeing all those people and the teachers and the kids. Like they're my favorite group of people. And I did comedy. So it was like, oh, it was interesting. So I could be the nerd, weird kid. And then I went to Emerson and it was like, oh no, man, you're a stiff.
Well, that's
one of the normal people.
But that's the thing about you, John, because you come across like you said, a little standoffish, a little in your face with some people, a little bit like,
mm-hmm.
There's this other side to you that I've come to know that mm-hmm. like, when you embrace, people, you really embrace them. So it's like it's and when I said at the top of the show that you get people that work hard.
Yeah.
Like you get some people don't understand the blue collar everyman person
mm-hmm.
to the degree that I think you really do.
Yeah. I mean to me that's
yeah.
I think that's the thing with me is that I don't care other than I know it sounds like self serving or whatever, but like if you get results, like if you're good at what you do, I don't care. So like if I were, say someday I were a showrunner or I was, trying to produce something or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some guy and they were like, oh man, this guy, he eats weird lunch or something every day. I'd be like, yeah, but he's really good, you know. And it's not everyone's like that. I mean, some places it's, you know, if you're not part of the gang, if you're not
right,
part of the clique.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm too lazy to lie, I guess. You know, you meet a lot of people and they're phony and whatever, and I couldn't keep track of it. And a lot of people say to me, like, you know what, dude, you tell it like it is. I'm like, yeah, well, it's just because I'm lazy. I don't have time. Right. Yeah, I don't have time to keep track of what did I tell this guy or whatever. And but yeah, it does.
Yeah,
you do rub people the wrong way. Like, I saw someone over the weekend. I went and did a show, and I don't know what it is. This person just hates me a lot, and does not hate a lot of other people.
Was this at one of the other clubs?
This was at a club.
At
recently.
A club recently.
And this
not
person,
the Broadway comedy club.
No, okay. Definitely not. Hi, okay. Al. No, but this person I met a couple years ago and got along pretty well, and then I think we hung out a little bit, and that was great. And I gave a reference for this person at one point. But just for whatever reason, it's just like, oh, my God. And I was thinking on the way home, like, I wish there was a, what is it, Shazam? That's the app for your song, finding out what a song
is. Oh, yeah.
I wish there was a Shazam for what this person thinks I said about them. You ever think about that?
Yeah.
You see people and you're like, man, this person's really throwing shade. Yeah. And you're like, I have very little to do with this person. I've never said anything. And you want to, like, scan them and be like, oh, they heard I made fun of their shoes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, hey, I like your shoes, and just try to patch it over. But I don't know. It just happens.
Yeah.
And do you notice that happen? That's a very...
I notice when I do it. When I do it to people, if I'm throwing shade, it's not so much them, it's me. It's like,
yeah,
so there's something
maybe
in that person.
No, this was like, this was the sort of thing
total
where it was
shade.
Like, yeah, it was total shade. It was like, I said hi, and everybody else there said hi, and this person did one of those, like, eye roll, turn the head things. And I was like,
really?
No, that's a definite.
Oh.
So I said to her, they're like, yeah, I saw that too, someone else. But I wish it was that, just because it's like, I think that's, in Boston, you never dealt with that. Because in Boston, people are very open.
Yeah, they're very real.
Yeah. So if someone's mad, they're going to tell you, you'll get an email, or they'll come up and talk to you. But that's been the thing in New York, is that, like, you know, when you have a job, a day job, like, you know, especially in comedy.
Sure.
So you're, a lot of people think if you have a day job in comedy, you're part of the scene. You're, in a way, you're kind of not, because it's two different worlds for you. So say, like, I used to have a day job in Boston where I worked at a local news station and I wrote promos for them. But as far as comedy went, my mind was 100% into the scene, like, mm-hmm. 100% into comedy.
Right.
But here, you're living two lives. You have a show, you have that comedy, that scene, then you have the stand-up scene. And you can't, like, in the middle of writing for Jimmy or putting a monologue together, also be talking to people about stand-up. You know, it's like, it's,
right.
You know. And so I don't get out as much as I used to, especially since we started The Tonight Show, and I don't see the scene as much. So I'm sometimes out of the loop.
All right,
I'll sometimes say to people, like, hey, how's it going? They're like, oh, we don't talk anymore. I'm like, why? And they're like, oh, you didn't see our Facebook thing? I'm like, no idea. And so I don't know what goes on. And then it's like that at work, too, like, where I'm kind of always at my desk, and I'll be like, where's so-and-so? I'm like, oh, they left 2 weeks ago. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, well, you're always at your desk.
Yeah, you're working.
Like, yeah.
You're doing what you have to do.
So when you have a standoffish personality,
yes,
and you don't have time to go schmooze, it's
you don't have time.
Super easy to, you know, and also being married and everything, it's, you know, you can't just go hang out. But it's very easy for people to, like, anyone could say, yeah, I think that dude's kind of didn't like you.
Yeah.
Like, what? And then that's it.
Yeah,
I'm
well.
I'm not going
to
be there.
Sorry, so. You're being responsible. All right, let me get to Emerson, and
mm-hmm.
after Emerson, what happens? You're obviously getting, schooled in, you know, whatever the creative things
mm-hmm.
you're doing there, and you write, and now you're somewhat of a joke writer there, right?
Yeah.
And you're getting recognized for that. What happens when you submit to? You had a friend, I think, right? That sort of helped you with that. So
my
what
friend
happens
Barry,
there? Right?
And he was a family friend, and he grew up with Jay. In Andover, Massachusetts, and his brother, who has since passed away, was best friends with Jay. So Barry knew him really well, and you know, they spoke often and stuff. And
are you writing for anyone else at this time?
No,
I had
not done anything.
Nothing.
22, just gotten out of
22,
just gotten out of college, and I had been writing for a newspaper in New Hampshire. And a new owner came in, and it was going really well. And then he just blew all the money, so he had to lay me off.
Oh, wow.
I got fired by email, too, which was
really?
kind of a bummer.
Jesus.
So
Class
anyway,
act.
Yeah. So anyway, I was kind of screwed, and I didn't have anyone to write for, and I was trying to get my life together. And, you know, so I talked to this guy, Barry, before, but he wasn't just going to give away references, you know, like just because, you know, if you're going to, you got to have something good to say if you're going to send it to Jay as like a resume or whatever. You can't just, you know. So I called him up and I said, you know, hey, I've been writing jokes. When I was in college, my senior year, I had like a late night show at Emerson, and the writing was really good. And took me forever to write the monologues, because when you're first starting out, I mean, I just remember sitting in my dorm room at like 1:30 in the morning, the show the next day, just sweating, being like, I've only written 2 minutes of this thing, you know, because I didn't know what I was doing yet. And but I got good at it, and I kept doing it over the summer. And I thought there might be a lead at Letterman at one point, and that didn't come together. But anyway, either way, I'd kept on kind of writing these jokes. And so I sent a few to Barry, and he said, hey, you know, these are pretty good. And so he mailed Jay my resume on a Saturday morning out of, you know, just regular mail. Somehow it got there by Monday. So he sent it from Hampton, New Hampshire to...
By regular mail.
Beverly Hills, I think.
The old school way.
So so anyway, that was on a Saturday, and he showed me. It was a really nice letter, and as my friend, I was thinking I would get like a, you know, I don't know, thanks for your interest, we'll keep you in mind thing.
Sure.
So that Monday night, I'm in my bedroom, the one with the New York skyline and the beach behind it, because I, you know, never thought that through.
Did you have a picture of an Emmy Award nomination on there as well?
No, I didn't have anything.
Okay.
And so I was up there, and I think I was watching Monday Night Raw, I think, watching the wrestling.
Yeah.
And, I heard the phone ring, and, you know, it was late. It was like 11 o'clock. And so I thought it was my grandmother or something. And, so then all of a sudden, my dad, I hear a knock on the door, and, you know, hello, and he comes in, and he just holds the phone out and goes, it's Jay Leno.
That's so.
And I just remember I shut the TV off, and I don't remember exactly, but I got on the phone, and I remember when I was taking the phone from him, I didn't want to drop it because I thought I'd hurt him somehow. You know? So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I get on, my dad leaves, and I get on the phone, and I go, hello? And he's like, hey, it's just John. Like, yeah, I was like, hey, it's just Jay Leno. So I got your letter from my friend Barry here. He's, said some nice things. Hey, I grew up with him. He's a good guy. And so we talked, and we talked, I think, for about half an hour, and he just kind of wanted to get a feel for what I was doing, and he gave really good advice, and he gave some advice that to this day I think about. You know, he stayed up really late writing jokes and coming up with ideas, and that's something I try to do.
Stay up really late.
Yeah. And then just kind of look for stuff that's going to be big the next day.
Okay.
And then... he also, you know, if you're writing a joke, you're competing with a lot of different people. So try to write it in an interesting way so that it's not just the angle everyone else is taking. And he ended up letting me, he said he was going to think about it. And then they'd be back in the office in a week later. So I called back and said, yeah, we'll give you a try. You know, we're going to send you a release. And so I started faxing jokes into him. And because he didn't do email, it was just through fax. And, November 18th, I got two jokes on the monologue.
Do you know what were those jokes?
I do. One was a new study found that the more intelligent a woman is, the harder it is for her to have an orgasm. And then the punchline was, see, blondes really do have more fun. And then the other one was NBC is coming out with a new mystery network. The first show, Whatever Happened to the People Who Used to Watch NBC. And
those are great.
Yeah, and they both got on, and they both did great. And it was like, you have one, and you're like, oh, here comes another. And so, but it was really like playing the lottery. It was like, you know, you would, you never knew. You had to watch the whole monologue. That's the only way you knew if you were going to be getting.
Do you know how many in total that you got on? Over how long did you do it?
I did it for about 3.5 years.
3.5 years. I got close, 22.
Close to 100, maybe.
100 jokes.
Maybe. I don't remember the exact number, but, I know by the end, I was getting like 2 or 3 a week. And, you know, by the end of that run of The Tonight Show
now
in 2009.
Now, I'm not going to ask you how much you got paid, but like, was it a reasonable amount for each joke? Like, were they
at the time
were you like, wow, this is pretty.
Yeah, I needed money. So
it was nice to get
enough
these...
to fill up my car a couple of times.
Okay,
you know?
So there
that
you
was,
go.
You know, this was back in I'll let anyone do the math. This is back in 05 and 06 when I started. So if you want to check the price of gas, which I recall being pretty high, that's how you can figure that out. It wasn't a great amount, but it was enough.
Right.
But it was also just that thing to have Jay Leno tell one of your jokes. And
I mean,
yeah,
surreal.
Yeah,
right?
Surreal. And he was always helpful and he was always great. But I think that, you know, he was an old school guy and that he, you know, he packed up and moved to L.A. and made a career out of it. And I wasn't ready to do that. And so I think it was one of these things where, you know, with him, he was always saying, you know, call anytime if you need any help.
Right.
Which I can tell you now means call once or twice. Like from working in the business, when someone tells you call anytime, it's like you really get like one or two favors and mm-hmm. then they're very busy.
Yeah, they are.
But I think I was, you know, because I read his book and his book was about how persistent he was and how he stayed on people till, you know, he finally caught a break. And so, you know, that was my approach with him.
Yeah.
And I think it just kind of, it got to a point where it was very like a one-sided thing where I was just this kid that really wanted a job. He was just probably like, kid, I gave you a break, you know?
Right.
So now that's why I think, one of the reasons I think I've lasted so long at Fallon is I kind of the opposite with Jimmy. You know, there's a lot of people that want a lot of FaceTime with him and want a lot of, you know, try to get in there and rub shoulders. And I'm just like, yeah, you know, I try not to.
To overstep any.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
I get
so,
that.
So if I ever, like I recommended a comedian for stand-up a couple weeks ago and I just emailed him like on a weekend when I knew he wasn't busy. And I was like, here's this guy. And if you want to take a look. And so I think that was.
Yeah. The
you know,
soft approach.
Yeah.
A bit
so
softer.
So I think that was a lesson I learned is that, you know, Jay was great and he was, did a lot of. Just he was always available to talk. He's always available to give advice. You know, I kind of promised myself after that. I was like, yeah, give people space,
yeah.
You know, because they're busy people too. So you can't, they can't always be doing you favors.
I have a quick Jimmy story. Mm-hmm. I was working at Caroline's at the time and Louis Ferranda mm-hmm. was, you know, still there.
Yeah.
And I remember I do a Louis Ferranda impression, but it's like, Gene, I have this videotape. That's how far back. We have this videotape of this kid. Come take a look.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Jimmy Fallon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's Jimmy Fallon on video.
Yeah.
He's playing the guitar and he's doing, you know, because he does all these band people. So he was doing U2
mm-hmm.
and he was singing. I'm not kidding you. He was singing about a troll doll.
Yeah.
He's like, troll doll. Like you did that. And he's like, what do you think of this kid, Gene? I go, he's funny. You know, like that's how, like I remember before anything, before SNL, before, because that was pre-SNL even.
Yeah.
And I, you know, like in your, like in the scope of things that happen in life, the behind the scenes players in your life.
Yeah.
I'm like one of those people who's like, yeah, let's get him on stage, you know, like in my mind.
That's
and then
great.
To see how like that all unfolds, like in
well,
life,
yeah.
It's such an amazing thing. He would, I did meet him. But
well,
he remembers
people though. Like, cause when I did my set there on the show last summer, he remembered Chris Murphy. Because they'd worked together.
That's awesome.
And Chris had always said, like, had all these fun stories about working with Jimmy, and he was just a kid. And after the set, Jimmy came, you know, he came to see me, and he turned, and he saw Murphy. He said, hey, man, you know, how's it going?
Yeah.
And, yeah, he remembers everybody.
He's really
so
awesome.
Yeah, but that's the thing with those guys is they do remember everybody.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I think that goes overlooked is that people, that's a skill for that job. You know, that's how you know you're a people person, is that if you can remember people from, cause I'm terrible at it. Like, you know, I used to be better at remembering things. And then, I used to be one of those people that could remember almost an entire day, like from when you were a kid.
Yeah.
Not like Mary Lou Henner, but like kind of close. But then as I hit like 28, 29, it started to kind of fade away a little
bit. Yeah, because you're getting so old, John. You're getting so old.
You fill your head. You know what I was thinking is you fill your head. My theory is I wish you could do like a memory dump for your brain. You know, like, your computer, like, I got all this dead. I can't put anything on there. I wish I could get rid of some people that I don't want to know anymore and bring in new people.
That's brilliant. I'd like to memory dump all my ex-boyfriends. Memory dump the shit out of that. It's gone.
Yeah. But then you might run into them and date them again, and oh, no. What are you going to do?
Oh, God, no. Please.
See, I'm a troubleshooter.
All right. Things are going so fast, and we have, I want to get to how you met Now, also, by the time you're doing this, you're involved with Rebecca, right? You're already... Are you dating Rebecca? This is his wife now.
Well, here's how that happened. I met her the same summer I got hired at Fallon. So
talk
that's
about
a
how...
cashing in all your chips sort of summer right there.
All right,
like,
let's...
I what happened was Jay's first version of The Tonight Show ended, and I had always kind of been under the impression that I would have a shot at getting a job when they expanded the writing staff for his 10 o'clock show. But I think just because they, you know, people have to see you a certain way to want to work with you.
Right.
And so I think since I came across as that pesky kid that was like, "Hey, Mr. Leno, give me a job." He was just like,
he's so Norman Rockwell-y.
No, I don't, you know, he's like, because he's probably thinking, oh, if I hire this guy, he's going to come in, you know, if he gets the job, then he's going to want to do stand up, you know, and rightfully so.
Right.
If he seemed too pushy. So, I was in the mix, sort of like, I think in the early or the late spring, like right when the Tonight Show ended, they were, and then, I also did a packet that year for Conan's Tonight Show.
Okay.
And, got rejected there. So, and I knew Brian Kiley, pretty well from Conan, and I knew Jay. So when you know two people well and you don't get anything, you're just like, oh, this is, you know, this is a whiff. What am I going to do? And I was still living back in New England at the time. And so then just on a whim, I had heard somewhere that they were taking freelance stuff at Fallon, which we don't do anymore. But I didn't know anyone there. And my dad, when we were out like walking the dogs one day in New Hampshire, was like, you know, this Jimmy Fallon's pretty fun. You know, what about the guy from Saturday Night Live? What about his show? Why don't you send something to him? I said, I don't know anybody there. And he's like, well, it couldn't hurt. I think that was like his way of being like, you got to pay us back at some point.
That's
so
hilarious.
Like, get a job. So I emailed Wayne Fetterman, who was at the time the head monologue writer. And I only knew of him really from Larry Sanders and Curb Your Enthusiasm, both of which he doesn't play the most. Well, Curb, he doesn't play the most wonderful guy.
Right.
So all I'm thinking is maybe this guy's not a great guy. And I emailed him, and then he wrote back the next day, and he's like, yeah, you know, we'd be happy to have you, and here's the process and everything. And so I started sending in jokes just kind of like I did with Jimmy, I mean with Jay, but for Jimmy. And I think the first night I got one on, and it just did okay. And I remember not being excited at all, because I was just like, well, here's another dead end, you know.
Wait, you weren't excited about
I thought, I was like, you know, I've already done this for Jay. I've gotten jokes on Weekend Update for Seth. Nothing's happened with it. So this is me. I'm a lifetime freelance guy, and I don't live in the right, Jay's right. I don't live in the right place, and I don't know anybody, and so whatever. And so, and the way I explain it to people is, like, I'm from, you know, the New England area, so I'm a Boston Red Sox fan. And there was a certain year, 2004, where we were playing the New York Yankees, I believe, in the playoffs.
Yes.
And game four, we were down 3-0. And
keep going at your own risk.
This guy, Dave Roberts, stole second base. And at the time, we were just like, oh, whatever. We're like, you know, maybe we'll win one game, go to extra innings. And ended up winning the World Series. And so I always say that first joke on Jimmy was a little bit like that, where I was like, at the time, not at all excited. I was like, oh, this is stupid, whatever. And I was like, I'm not going to get anything out of this. But then I think 2 nights later, I got another one. And what I didn't know was they were good. Like, because, you know, when you're writing, when I was writing jokes for, like, Jay was never going to call me up and be like, oh, you're really knocking it out of the park. You know, like, he's just like, yeah, you're lucky to, you know, I was lucky. But then I think about, you know, a little bit in, I got the Wayne emailed me back, and he said, just so you know, we're really happy. And I thought, when I saw the email come back from him, I was like, oh, I'm getting fired. Like, I was like, they're dropping out freelancers, and it wasn't. And he was like, you have a real talent here. And I think that was the way, you're really talented. We couldn't be more happy with your writing. And it was almost like a thing where you almost wanted to cry. You're like,
sure.
Someone's finally telling me I'm good at this. And it's like a revelation where you're like, I'm not crazy. Like, this, I was right to stick with this. And that same week, now this was a while before I got hired, because he emailed me, I think, right after I'd started.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple nights later, I met Rebecca. I went to a Beach Boys concert in Boston.
Yeah, you're a fan.
My favorite band.
The Beach
since
Boys.
Since I was three.
Yeah.
And she sat right next to me. And we ended up exchanging. Well, here's what I did. I had cards, cards made, like, you know, comedian cards. And of course, I didn't have any when I met her.
Okay.
And I just had, I don't know why I had it, but for months I'd had a torn piece of yellow notebook paper in my wallet. And it was just there. And I was in such a dark place in my life that I didn't think, like, I didn't even bother to throw it out. I was just like, eh, whatever. I don't feel like throwing
look at that
it.
Yellow. So
I'm just
going right.
to, who cares? Let's just right. let it sit there. And, I at the end of the concert, I said to her, this is how long ago it was. I go, are you on the Facebook? Because it was when it was still called the Facebook.com. Remember that?
Right.
So are you on the Facebook? She goes, yeah. And she kind of lit up. And it was that similar thing where the whole time I couldn't tell if she was attracted to me or didn't like me at all. She had that sort of.
I still don't know.
Yeah. That's a fair point. We have that discussion
I love her, right, man. She's awesome.
Earmark that part of the podcast because she's going to make that her ringtone. But but it was that sort of thing where she was kind of sizing me up all night, and I didn't know if I had said, like, right away, even then, I was like, what, did I say something to offend this person? Like, what's your problem? Like,
right.
I was like borderline of, like, what's your problem and do you want to go out? That was,
yeah, exactly.
It was two extremes for me. And so I asked her, are you on the Facebook? And she said, yeah. And so I wrote down my name on this yellow piece of paper that had been kicking around for no reason. And I couldn't remember why I had it in there. Maybe I was doing an open mic and I, like, needed it and I just forgot. And I gave it to her and I got home and she friended me on Facebook. And then we went out soon after. And then we'd been dating, I think, about a month maybe. And then I got hired at Fallon. And it was just like, you know, is that, like, have you ever seen Vanilla Sky?
Yes.
I always think back and I'm like, that's insane. Like, it really is weird. Like, if you were to say to me on paper, all right, you're going to, you know, you're going to get a job with Jimmy Fallon, the guy you watched on Weekend Update in college, you know, with all your friends. And yeah, I always knew, like, I had said back in college, and people remind me of this, I had said as far back as junior year of college, he's going to take over for Conan. And people were like, why? I was like, I just can tell. Like, he's everyone likes him. He's really great. Lauren likes him. Like, this is going to be the guy. So, you know, when people were, because I think everyone took him for granted. I think when he was on SNL, Will Ferrell was there and Daryl Hammond and, you know, who else? Like Anna Gasteyer. And,
oh, yeah.
Just all these, Tracy Morgan and all these people. And then when Jimmy, but Jimmy was always great. And then I remember the year after he left watching it with one of my friends and you missed him a lot. And I was like, and we turned to each other and said, Jimmy Fallon was really great. Like, you know, we always, I think just because he was close to age of us, you know, he's only a few years older. So we were like, he was like our friend, you know, we'd watch the show, be like, oh, there's our friend, you know, gets to live the dream. And so I always kind of kept an eye, like, I always thought he was really funny. And, you know, I remember living in LA and North Hollywood broke, you know, the year I was working as a PA. And when it came up that it leaked out that he was under consideration, this was 07. And I was like, that's where I want to be. Like that show. Like,
right.
I remember watching this guy's first spot on Update when I was 15. And I was like, I like this guy. Like, this guy feels like our guy. And so if you'd said, like, okay, you're going to go work for this dude, that's going to be your first job. That's who you're going to learn from in New York City. And you're going to meet the girl of your dreams at a Beach Boys concert. I'd have been like, yeah, it's too on the nose.
Yeah.
I'd be like, yeah, you gotta, I was like, you know, yeah, like, yeah, there's gotta be, like, you know, like, maybe we made it a something close.
It sounds so 1950s.
Yeah,
so
maybe.
Something like, you know, look, your dreams come true. Your dreams come true with,
yeah,
John,
like,
Reinman.
Maybe we meet at something else. Maybe we meet at, like, something sort of close. Like, maybe we meet at a Three Dog Night concert. That's like, I'm not that happy to be there, but I just happen to be there.
Right.
So it's sort of similar. And then through that, we find another.
Right.
Then maybe, like, you know, oh, you get a job at, like, a Fuse show or, you know, Fuse TV.
Oh, yeah.
And
or
then
a
through
Fuse.
That, you get in
right.
it.
Yeah.
You know,
Fuse.
But, like, here's all your stuff at once.
Right.
It was like, that's very.
It's pretty intense.
It's almost like God's being sarcastic.
Yeah, like, look at you.
Yeah, like, here you go, buddy.
Yeah.
How are you going to blow this?
Yeah.
And I've come close, but I think that's been the challenge. I think it was just that, you know, one thing we didn't get into is that, you know, and as a teenager, it was interesting. Like I said, I was happy in high school and everything, but I had some health issues. I had rheumatoid arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that gave me this chip on my shoulder to always be like, well, life's unfair, when really life's pretty good. And I think that summer in 09 was fate's way of being like, okay, we're going to give you a blank check.
Yeah.
And, you know, see if you can not blow it.
Yeah.
And like I said, I've, you know my personality. There's been Yeah. I can be a grumpy person.
Yeah, you can be grumpy.
So there's times where people have to say, hey, man, you're blowing it. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
kinda
so you
reel
gotta
it back in. But
let me ask you a quick question. We don't have a lot of time, so I want to ask you about two things.
Sure.
Baseball. I was listening to another podcast you did, I think, with a friend of yours. Like he does that TV guide.
Oh, Ken Reed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were talking about your favorite baseball movie being A League of Their Own.
100%.
Now, why that over Fever Pitch with your man?
Well, I do like Fever Pitch.
It's a great movie.
I do like Fever Pitch. Yeah. And I'll tell you, that's one of the reasons I don't identify as much of a Red Sox fan. Like, I like the Reds. I'll watch them. I think it's fading for me. But I think part of it is when people, you know, there's some of it's a very, the Red Sox fans are, it's crazy. It's almost like a, you know, liberal conservative thing. There's two different groups. There's one group that's, they just go to the game and have fun. And then there's other grumpy dudes that are just like, they hate anyone that's not a miserable, horrible, angry Red Sox fan. So,
gotcha.
Like, they, you know, they always talk about, like, oh, the girls with their pink hats coming here. And it's ridiculous. And I'm like, why is it ridiculous? Yeah, well, they're not real fans. I'm like, well, they bought tickets.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, well, they're only here when they're good. And I'm like, okay, well, the stadium's empty when they're bad. Why aren't you there? You know, like, you're pretty fair weather yourself, you know? And then they hate
telling it like
hate,
it is.
They hate that they play Sweet Caroline. Like, yeah, that's, I tell you, that's when it ruined everything. I'm like, you're an idiot. Like, you're just an idiot. You're just a stupid idiot. Like, you want, like, well, we want things like the old, when they were terrible and racist. That's that's the Red Sox you miss.
Yeah.
Like, there's no good history here.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? And so those guys, when they started, even before I knew Jimmy, were like, this Fever Pitch, whatever. I was like, what's your problem with it? Like, why? Like, because you know why you don't like it? Because you know it's true. Because you watch it and you know that's how you act.
Yeah.
And this guy's likable. And you're not
likable. Hardcore fan. Hardcore.
Yeah, hardcore.
Hardcore.
And, but I loved it. I remember I saw it in college and I thought it was great.
Yeah.
And I thought Jimmy was great too. But, so when he makes, you know, he'll make the occasional joke about, like, oh, my movies. I'm like, no, he was great in that movie.
He was great.
And,
do you go to games with him? Have you gone to a game with him?
I haven't gone to a game with
him.
Okay.
Because I can imagine that would be a lot of fun.
It probably would be, but I think they know with me it wouldn't be a lot of fun. Like, I think if they know, you know, if it's
Old Man Reinman is going to the game.
Old Man Reinman, who, I don't know. Like, we were supposed to go to a basketball game at one point, and I didn't follow up on it because I'm not. Especially if it's a Celtics game, I can't go with someone who's, like, I'm not going to go with my boss to a Celtics game.
Yeah.
And just, you know, because if it's that game where one of our guys dribbles it off his foot in the last 3 seconds and we lose, I don't want my boss to see my reaction to that.
Because you do get pretty intense.
I get quiet. I get withdrawn.
Yeah.
And I keep to myself when it happens. Like, one time, my dad and I were at a Celtics game back in 2002, and Paul Pierce missed a free throw that would have tied it. And I picked up my jacket and just walked out.
Yeah.
And my dad,
yeah,
who was a very fast walker, was even like, hey.
Yep.
And he timed it. He said we were out of the building in 4 minutes.
Yeah.
I was so annoyed. But I like Fever Pitch. I've seen it a billion times. And I really do. I actually, but it was funny because once we were in a meeting, and I love the Celtics. That's my team.
That's
Boston
your team.
Celtics. Anything. It's like a religion for me. I like the system. I like everyone that works for them. I like all their great players. It's what I grew up with. They were the first team in the NBA to integrate, first team to have a black head coach. You go to the games there, it's the most diverse group of people in Boston, I think, at a Celtics game.
Yeah.
And it's just really, really cool. And back in 2010, they were in the finals, and I was really, really into it. We were in a monologue meeting, and Jimmy said, dude, you just, it's like, that's all you care about. You're just your Boston team. That's like all you do. It's crazy. It's all you watch, it's all you wear, it's insane. And I kind of sat there for a second, and I go, yeah, you know, they should make a movie about a guy like, and then he just cut me off. And that was like the first, and then he kind of laughed. And so that's kind of our relationship is, you know, he's super cool and I'm not, but it's this weird thing where he can make fun of me for not being cool. And I can just be grumpy back, but it's in a fun,
that's good,
likable.
That's
way.
That's a good dynamic to have. Mm-hmm. You got to have that. You're like a straight man. A straight man.
I wouldn't know, but he helped me figure that out. Like he does. He does an impression of me. He does the whole thing. And,
God, so, it must be hilarious.
But then that's when I kind of got it. That's when stand up got better. I was like, I saw his perception. And I'm like, Okay. So he kind of explained me to me.
Two quick things. WrestleMania or all the wrestling, you're a big wrestle, like Raw you mentioned before. Mm-hmm. You're the Undertaker.
Oh, love
like,
Undertaker.
I don't watch any of that. Does Rebecca, your wife, have any part of this? Does she take in this nonsense?
I'll be honest. I'm a bandwagon fan at this point where okay. I'll only watch, they do that thing, the Royal Rumble, where it's like 30 guys and you have guys come back as surprises. And I'll okay. watch that.
What's the double doink thing? I heard that on your friends.
Gosh. So WrestleMania 9, there was this guy, Doink the Clown, and he was fighting this guy, Crush, and the referee got knocked out. Big coincidence. So the ref gets knocked out, and Doink's about to lose, and another Doink comes up and hits Crush over the head with a cast full of lead and knocks him out. And then it was like, what? There's two Doinks? And to this day, I've not seen anything in TV that was that... Like, sort of the Mad Men finale I liked a lot. Mm-hmm. But even that, I was like, meh. But two doinks, I mean, no one knew that was coming, you know?
Yeah.
And, but no, I don't watch it as much anymore just because I think, I don't want to say I've outgrown it, but I think it's, when you're a writer and I've met people that work for them, and I know too much is what I would say.
Yes.
So I don't get that same shock, but she likes it. She likes the Divas show. She watches they have their reality show with the women. So
okay,
she's probably a bigger fan than me at this point.
All right. So there's so much more, and I'm probably going to have you back at some point to talk more. Interestingly enough, from your hometown, David Ogden Nash is a poet that is buried there.
Yeah, Ogden Nash, and my favorite poet.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a rhymer. He likes to. He's a big time rhymey guy.
Yeah, he would have been a great tweeter.
He would have been great.
Yeah, he was ahead of his time.
We didn't talk about your love of Cheers, which you're... I wanted to ask you, and this is something you can contemplate. Are you thinking of maybe writing your own sitcom?
Yes.
Good, because I could see that coming out of you. Mm-hmm. That's just my... See, if you were going to predict Jimmy Fallon and his rise, and I sort of felt like I could have done that.
Maybe I'm already working on it.
That's what I'm saying. If you can write a part for a sassy, sort of,
of
sexy,
course.
Dark-haired, Cher-esque type. This was one of David Ogden Nash's quotes. Marriage is the alliance of two people, one of whom never remembers birthdays and the other who never forgets them. And that was one of his quotes. And whenever you're wrong, admit it. Whenever you're right, shut up. Do you think, in closing, you follow those two quotes of David Ogden Nash in your marriage? Because, I love you guys. So.
I try to. And I got to, that's my focus. That's my resolution for this year is to, not that I've been a bad husband, but I'm trying to be a nice, happy, because when you get bogged down with comedy and writing, you kind of get withdrawn. You can come home and be quiet and just kind of be exhausted. But she's the best person I know, the happiest person. And another show I love is Everybody Loves Raymond. So
yes.
That's a good show to watch every now and then. And I'll see him do it. I'm like, oh, I just did that. That wasn't good. And then I'll go in and fix it. But I'll watch that, and she's just watching me the whole time. Yeah. So I'm like, I'm just making sure you're seeing this.
Wow.
But no, she's great, and I try to stick with it. And, it's. I think it's true. I think Ogden Nash is a wise man.
Yeah, I think so too. And on that note, I want to thank you, John, for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Head monologue writer over at the Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. Where can people find you other than the Broadway Comedy Club at 318 West 53rd Street, owned by Al Martin? can find you at The Cellar as well.
Yeah, The Cellar. And I do Caroline's every now and then. And then this coming week, Wednesday through Saturday, I'm going to be at the Phoenix House of Comedy.
All right.
In Phoenix, Arizona.
Very
on the road.
Good.
So packing some shorts and some t-shirts.
Nice.
Go out there.
Take some nice pictures. Maybe when I go out with your wife to, because we like to go to baseball games. We went to one together.
You guys have fun. Yeah.
We had a good time. Thank you again for being here. And then people can tweet at you at Rhinemania.
Yeah.
Okay. Rhinemania.
Rhinemania. Very clever.
Yes. And you have Rhinemania. And you have a website.
Yeah, rightmania.com.
Okay, perfect. Thank you again.
Thanks for having me, Gina.
You got it. WROM radio listeners in Detroit, internet users worldwide, subscribers on iTunes. Thanks for listening. This is Gina Savage. You can find me on Savage in the City on Twitter, Savage in the City Pics on Instagram. Thanks to Jim Verne on Sound Engineering. We'll be back next week.